This talk was already in the schedule of Easter Hag, and it was announced as being English, but there were only German speakers in the room, so I figured I'd do it in German. But even though there still seem to be only German speakers here, I'm still going to do it in English, so you're out of luck. Just for, I guess, for the tape, so that we have this in English. Okay, anyway, so I'm Andreas, or Fraxinas, in the Aschaffenburg hacker maker space, Aschaffenburg e.V., and I built a photo booth, and this talk is going to be about why and how and all of this. First off, what is such a thing? What is a photo booth? So, you probably remember the actual photo booth cabin things in train stations or at the city hall where you could get passport photos printed. They used to work with actual developing film. Of course, now there are digital, with digital cameras and digital printers. And yeah, they're still around, just not as popular anymore. And of course, nowadays, the term booth refers to devices that you don't necessarily have to climb into and you're encased in a little box, but it's also for just a device that stands somewhere or hangs on a wall. And yeah, in Japan, there are really popular devices called Purikura, and it comes from Print Club, and there are little things that came up in the 1995 by one of the major digital game manufacturers. I forgot which one, Konami or something. And you could basically take a picture of yourself, and then you'd have a little screen, and you could put clip art on it and move it around and then print little stickers, and they're still very popular in Japan. So a photo booth, as I refer to, or as it's generally referred to, is a device that'll take a picture of you after a countdown usually, and then you can preview yourself in the screen digitally, decide whether you want to print it or not. And they don't even necessarily have to have a printer. Sometimes they just capture the photos, like on a wedding or something, and then they might go into a digital photo album. Or, of course, nowadays, you may want to upload them to Facebook or to any social network thing, the popular things. Not so popular on events like this, but still. And of course, usually photos are saved on hard disk or SD card or not. Yeah, and sometimes you have funny props that you can use and disguise yourself or make yourself even prettier than you already are. Yeah, typical use cases, I already mentioned weddings and of course birthday parties, big corporate events or congresses like this, affairs. So our motivation, why did we build such a device, was it's really fun to use. So I was at a birthday party at a 40th, and we printed over 500 copies on that night with roughly 100 guests, and it was really funny. Everybody had a great time. And I wanted to have that photo booth for an event, for a charity event, Christopher Street Day in Aschaffenburg. And then I found out how much these things actually cost when you rent them. They're really expensive. Goes up to like 1500 euro a day. And I thought to myself, well, for that price, we can probably build one ourselves out of used parts. And so I decided, yeah, why don't we just do that? Considering that on that date, that photo booth wasn't available anymore anyway. It turns out we can actually use it to make some money out of it, because people pay donations to get their photos printed, and when we're on a public event, on a fair or something, people have a lot of fun taking pictures and then printing them, having something as a souvenir to take home, and we hand out our little flyer from our hackerspace, and they give us a donation for the prints. It's a win-win situation. And of course, when you start from scratch, then you really have to plan it, and you learn a lot. It's the software, it's the hardware, it's the woodworking. bringing it all together, like interdisciplinarily, that was a big, nice project. And it's ideal if you want to delegate it into different groups, like one group does the software, one group does the Arduino, whatnot. So our approach building that thing was, first I wrote an experimental capture program. So is it possible using a digital a DSLR camera, not so much a webcam, that would be too easy, a digital actual good camera, capture a preview image, a live video, and then capture the photos through USB with a little program. So when that worked, I decided, let's go for a printer. And we bought all the different parts, plugged it together, and then once that worked, built the cabinet, the case. Yeah, and then at the end, added some effects and the flash and everything. So about the software architecture. So of course, it had to be all free software. We didn't want to use proprietary camera makers' drivers. We didn't want to use Windows or anything closed source. So of course, the base is Linux. And then there's three main parts that I use, three frameworks or libraries to build the PhotoBooth application. And first part is libgphoto2. And this is a an abstraction for basically every digital camera that there is, there's like 2,000 or something supported, more or less. You have a pretty high level API, and you just tell it, take a camera or take a picture, download the picture, take preview video, and it does it all for you. You don't have to deal with separate camera drivers or manufacturing. Or manufacturers' specialties for the different USB whatnot. So that makes it really easy, but it's also a little techy. It doesn't work perfectly yet. You'll see later. The documentation is not very nice either. So it's pretty much non-existent. There are a few examples that you can use, but it's not so easy. But it's getting better. They're still working on it. So for example, this is a little sample command. And what it'll do, it'll just do what it pretty much says. It'll take a picture and download it as a file. Then I have it. And then I can display that. And voila, this is a live picture from just now. Pretty easy. It's just one command. And it works with any camera, pretty much. So that was nice to have. Going back to this. The next big column I call it is GStreamer. And GStreamer does everything that has to do with video processing and image processing in the PhotoBooth software. So GStreamer is a general purpose multimedia framework. It's pipeline based. I'll go into that later. What that means, it's media agnostic, which means you can pretty much convert everything into everything, read everything. It can be a text file or any network stream. So it supports everything. And if it doesn't support it, then you just write a plugin for it. There's countless plugins in three different categories, like good, bad, ugly. And it's super cool to use. you should take a look at it. And for example, it allows you to, if you capture a preview with the GPhoto, that'll output a motion JPEG stream. So pretty much take one JPEG image after another and then send that to standard out. Then I can pipe that into GStreamer with GST launch, read it out with FD source, then pretty much reads the standard out again, standard in. Decode bin is a magic element that'll find out what stream it is and then plug the necessary elements to decode that. And auto video sync is the element that'll show it on the screen. And I'll just do that real quick. That's this command. I have this display equals zero because I'm working remotely so that the terminal knows that I want it on that screen. And yeah, this is the live view. Can I? No, not with that mouse. So you can see this is pretty much that stream. Okay. So the third part is glib and GTK+. That's the GUI framework that I used. It's an old one that was originally created in 96 for GIMP. So it's, I think it even stands for GIMP something. So it's an acronym. And it gives you everything that you may know from like Qt or all the widget systems toolkits. You have buttons, sliders, and you have below that you have an event-driven system that'll let you take all that and turn it into a program. So below the GTK, there's glib. That's also what GStreamer is based on, not libgphoto. Even if it's called GPhoto, it doesn't use glib. And it's a low-level core library that'll pretty much bring an object-oriented program into ANSI C. So you can use object-oriented programming, and you have threads and signals and everything that you expect from a modern system. And since GStreamer uses that already, I decided to just go and use that in the photo booth too, and not Qt or anything else. That was a question last time. There's a builder software for the GUI. It's called Glade, and it's just a UX designer that I used. Okay, so about the user interface of the software. It's pretty easy because it's meant to be used by children or anyone just with a touch screen. It starts when you first start it up. It parses the ini file, loads a couple of options from it. You can customize it extensively. You have a template for the user interface. You can replace and colorize all the widgets, the buttons, change the font, the size. And of course, an overlay image. This one still has the Easter egg overlay. I made one for GPN now, of course. And the save paths and the template, how the files that are saved should be named, the countdown duration, the strings for that should be displayed, like the say cheese. You could put anything else in there, translated, for example, and settings for the sound, like there's a beep during the countdown. You could change that into anything, and you can also have a background video that'll play after a certain time. I call it screensaver. It's more like a camera saver because the camera gets really warm during the live view and takes a lot of energy. Goes through the batteries real fast. And settings, how many copies you want to allow, max and minimum, and the tokens for social media upload, like Facebook, Imgur, Twitter, Yeah, so you start that up and then you set it somewhere and it'll go into the preview and people can see themselves on the screen. When a camera is detected, then it starts. And by touching the screen, the countdown will start. It counts down from 6 to 0 and then takes a picture. And then you see the picture on the screen. You can decide, do you want to print it? Do you want to cancel? And with a slider, you can select how many prints you want, how many copies. And then once it's done printing, you get another button where you can upload it to Imgur or Facebook if you want. It defaults to no upload. So if you don't do anything, then it'll disappear and go back into preview after a moment. There's also a little status bar in the bottom that'll tell you the date, so you can see if it's still working, if it still counts the seconds. And then on the right side, there's a status of the printer, how many copies you can still make. It's a big printer with a roll of paper that holds 600 copies, and it'll count down. So this is about the architecture of the application itself. It has, this is the main application context on the left side. Then there's a capture thread that is, that's pretty much controlling the libg photo commands, which will read from the camera, continuously read the motion JPEG stream that I've mentioned, and then hand that over to GStreamer, which will display it, decode it and display it. And there's also the LED thread, a LED class, which will talk to the Arduino and make it all pretty colorful. Just maybe go into this real quick. So once the capture thread is started, pretty much it'll do an init, and then it'll just keep capturing video, and this invokes the capture preview command of libgphoto, and then that's read by FD source and displayed by GStreamer. Pretty much as I just showed you on the command line, this is all it does. When you take a picture, so when you start the countdown, that's a little more complicated, because first off you have to close and re-init the camera, otherwise you don't get to take a picture. It's a little tricky. Then the countdown will start after a moment or a moment later. The LEDs will start flashing or will start counting a countdown, a colorful one. And then it will take the actual photo. It will read the photo into GStreamer, and then it'll start a processing pipeline where it, lets out really in detail if you're interested. So it goes through a couple of times. The first time it does a color correction so that the skin tones look correctly, and it'll capture that again and it'll print it. And at first it'll display it, and then it'll print it, or it'll capture it so that it can be printed, and so on. So these things are in our Git or online if you want to take a look at it. So earlier I mentioned that GStreamer is pipeline-based. That means that you can you have a data flow from the source to a sink, and with processing elements in between. And you can plug and play those together as you please. I go into the video preview pipeline again. So this is that FD source that reads from the camera the video stream. It'll filter it. The filter tells it which format it has. Then this is a JPEG decoder element, which will turn the separate JPEG images from the camera into a decoded video stream that you can work with. Like you can't scale a JPEG video with GStreamer or a JPEG image. You can only scale raw stream or raw video with it. So first you have to decode it, and then you can scale it so that it fits the screen size and the printer size, because the preview video has pretty low resolution. That's one of the disadvantages of the G-Photo. Like I said, it's a really high abstraction. It works generally every camera, but it doesn't work very well with every camera. So you have a low resolution, a high latency, a low frame rate. Okay, so you have to blow it up to fit the screen, and then you have to maybe convert the color space, and then you can do an overlay of that mask, like of that Easter egg or GPN, whatever you want. That can have alpha transparency as well, so you need a format that supports that. And then at the end, you can display that in the GTK sync, is what the what I chose. This is the video pipeline, and the photo pipeline is a little different than what I showed you earlier. So it doesn't actually save it as a file. Instead, it'll save it into memory directly, and then read that, and then do the JPEG decoding. It'll have to turn it. It'll have to freeze it. That image freeze turns that single JPEG frame into a video stream, and then the video stream can be processed as before with the overlay, a conversion, a gamma. Is like makes it darker or brighter. Can correct that. Then that T element splits it up into three different paths. And the first path is a LCMS, that's a little color management system. Like I said before, that corrects the skin tones, because the type of printer that we use need a color correction, a color profile, otherwise it looks really funny. Then the second route goes into a JPEG encoder, and that turns that raw video back into a JPEG image and saves it on a hard disk. And the third one just goes to the screen and displays it. And you may wonder, where is the social media upload? The social media uploads the JPEG that's saved to the disk. And that's not an own path there. Okay, so I talked a long time about the software. Now let's go into the hardware real quick. We'll open up that box. And there is pretty much a general purpose PC mainboard in it. It's a regular PC that runs Linux. And we work with a good digital camera. Like I said, it's supported by LibGPhoto. It has to be supported. But if it's a modern one, then there's a good chance. Like if you go with a Nikon or a Canon, or it's pretty much guaranteed that it'll work. Why are we using that and not just a webcam? It's because, of course, you get a lot better picture quality. If you want to give the JPEGs that you save to a client, then they have to be like decent quality. You could make prints from a webcam. That'll be enough. That's how the actual photo booth that you may find at a lot of places work. Because it's a lot easier grabbing the video from a webcam and then just turning that into a photo than it is the other way around. But we do it anyway. What also helps is it has a flash output, of course, on the top, the hot shoe from the camera, that you can plug that in. And we are working with a cheap wireless transmitter. So the flash is not controlled by the software or anything, or LibGPhoto, it's controlled by the camera itself. Yeah, and the camera, of course, already existed. We had one, and we have another one that we want to test it with. Yeah. So generally you will find a digital camera in any hackerspace, maker space, I guess. So you don't have to buy that specifically for it. And you can just put it in the booth if you want to use it and then take it back out really easily. It just mounts on the tripod mount. Good. The next component is the touchscreen, of course. I just bought something off eBay and it was advertised as an open frame TFT touch display, and it turned out to just be a really cheesy regular display and a resistive glass with a sensor and a USB controller. And apparently somebody hadn't gotten it to work and then sold it again. But it worked quite well in Linux. It's an X input calibrator and it works like a mouse pretty much. Just have to set the coordinates and then it works. I use VGA because the HDMI had some flickering issues. I don't know if it's a graphic card or the controller of the display, probably more like that. But that's okay. Printer, it's over there. It's a really big box. Why did we go with one of those? It's because we needed something that was really quick and had decent quality. And there's the little portable photo printers, but they are super slow. They take over a minute for a little photo, and they are super expensive, like the media is. It costs like €1 or €2 for a single print. So we decided we needed something that will be able to handle the case where there's six people standing in front and they want two copies for each one. We can't just make the people wait for half an hour and then come back later. They want it instantly. So we needed a thermosublimation printer. This is like the type that you will find at the drugstore where you can go with your USB stick and print out your camera pictures. I got one, a used one from a photographer for a good price. It has a big roll of paper, like endless paper in it, and it'll actually cut with a knife, cut off the separate pictures when they're done printing. And that makes it really cheap. So it's less than 15 cents per copy. And of course the thermal sublimation means it's dry right away. So you don't have to wait until some ink is dry or anything. You can touch it and it's fine. But those things are expensive. So this one would cost over €1,800 when it's new. It's an older model, but the ones that come out still are in that price range because they're not consumer products. They are professional equipment. A problem, of course, is the availability of drivers. The manufacturers never make them. So I don't know of any thermosublimation printer that has native Linux support. But there is the Gutenprint project, and that has drivers for a lot of color laser printers or laser printers in general, and also those dye sublimation printers, thermosublimation. They have another problem. They're really big and really noisy and really heavy. When you can actually really hear them work through the box, very loud. That's okay. So you need to carry that thing separately. It's 18 kilos roughly. And of course you need to take care of the image color matching yourself, because otherwise it'll come out looking funnily. It's like I mentioned before. Good. Yeah, the PC is a standard mainboard, something that I had in the cellar, just laying around. Nothing special, nothing fancy. It would work with an embedded PC. That would be nicer. We wouldn't have to worry about like open parts and coolers that you could touch, but we just didn't have one laying around. And there's an Arduino Uno, which controls some RGB LEDs that we have to catch attention around the camera lens, and a stripe on the printer tray, on the output tray. I'll just show you real quick. I can just open the terminal emulation here, and then probably makes this a little larger, and then just it'll read chars through the serial port and then turn that into commands. So if I write a little C, then the countdown will start. This 6 seconds countdown. And this is supposed to focus the attention of the person that's being photographed into the lens. It doesn't always work. Usually they look at themselves in the screen down below. Usually we have to tell them, please look in the lens. And then a little F will make it flash. And P and a number will make the bottom one glow and shine in the processing colors of the dye sublimation printer. So, you know, now it's doing the blue, now it's doing the magenta, now it's doing the yellow, and then this is the real time. And then the print is done. Just so that you know it's working. Of course you can hear it, unless it's really noisy. Okay, so let me exit that. Yeah, Arduino. Good. Okay, this is about the woodwork. We wanted a natural, friendly, environmentally friendly thing. We built it out of all used parts, so we didn't want an aluminum or a really shiny, high glossy box for it. Instead, we used wood, of course, and it's 10 millimeter plywood covers, and on the inside there's a framework from with Leisten is the German word. I don't know what the English word is. Frames probably. I drew that in SketchUp. That's the only software used in the whole project that's not open source. It's free, but it's not open, just because I knew how to use it. We could probably use FreeCAD or something just to draw that thing. These images also come out of SketchUp. And I did it in the workshop of my dad, and he is pretty well equipped with saws and different stuff. So this is where we could do all of that. One interesting detail is probably that I had to use glazing tape for fitting that screen into the cabinet, because it wasn't an OEM open frame screen after all. It was just a regular one that is meant to be in a plastic case, like the regular consumer one. So I used a tape that is flexible, that's usually meant for building windows, on glazing tape. And that is used in different parts too, just for underneath the camera, on the camera mount. The camera is held on the bottom with the tripod mount, and I made a custom screw for that, because it is a quarter inch UNC mount. It's something that's not really used anywhere else in Germany. So I used a regular screw and cut that mount into it. The printer and the camera are transported separately, and all of the other components are fixed inside the box. There's also speakers that'll play a countdown beep and can play some music. And we usually just put them on top, but they're supposed to go somewhere in the box, like on the side or something, once I figured out how to do that nicely. And there's a butterfly locks, these things here, and they allow transporting it easily. It's like from stage equipment, like in a flight case, you can find those things. It's really sturdy and carry handles. Yeah. And the bottom is a tripod, and that is supposed to be a reminiscence of actual photo tripods or optical devices. like they still have the camera ones. And of course, they can't wobble if it's three instead of four. That's another good thing. Yeah, of course, we also have some 3D printed parts. That is mainly the little tray that the photos fall into, and we've printed that on our makerspace RepRep. And there's another part which is this thing that will protect the 3D LEDs. That's a little diffuser thing. And when the printer is not in the box, then you can also store that. Doesn't break off as easily. Okay, yeah, issues. well, so once we use that thing on a intercultural fair in Aschaffenburg, and it was a really hot July day, glaring sun, and the display isn't really fit for that. So there's not enough contrast to really be able to see yourself. So you have to turn it into the shade. Then it's possible, but it's not optimal. That fairground wasn't paved, so there was a lot of dust, and the dust went everywhere. So we were really having a hard time getting it cleaned afterwards. Especially since we had to open the back. There is a cover for the back, but we couldn't close that because it was getting too hot. We are missing a few fans in there. So the heat builds up, especially from the printer. It's a thermal sublimation process, which pretty much means that it'll thermically heat a ribbon with color swatches and turn that into a gas phase and then bring it onto the paper that way. So it gets really hot. It has over 400 watts during the printing process. And the camera gets really hot during the preview, considerably actually. And of course the display and the PC don't help either. If we really want to use this during the summer outside, then we need some ventilation concept. And it would be best to use like filters in front of the fans so that we don't suck all of the dust into it. It usually takes a while, or we're getting better at it, we're learning, but it takes a while to set it up properly, just the photo setup. The exposure time, the aperture, all of those things. Autofocus is horrible. That went really wrong. So the autofocus you can only trigger a photo and then it'll start focusing. And the focusing may take from like 0.1 of a second up to 2 or 3 seconds, because when there's people moving in the background, or when it doesn't know what to focus on properly, then it may zoom in and out all the way until it finds the sweet spot. And that wasn't really working well, because we are doing a countdown and people expect the picture to be taken at zero and not sometime. So we had to turn off the autofocus and we're usually just moving people into the focus spot with a manual focus. There's a lot of room for improvements. Am I over the time? Okay, so I already mentioned some of these things. Cool gimmick would be, for example, a coin validator. People throw in a coin and then it takes a picture. Something like that. And just make it more robust, or print QR codes on the copies so that people can download it, or things like that. So the cost was roughly about 1,000 euro, and that has already paid itself off by donations that people give us for the prints. So this is now a money-making machine for our hackerspace. So consider building one if you want to have some public relations and publicity. You can give out your flyers together with the prints and print your logo on the copies and make some donations with it. Yeah, that's the intention. Okay, any questions? If we're, yeah.
How much time?
Yeah. Oh, okay. You got a microphone.
How much time did it take making everything, including what everyone else did?
Yeah, it took only about 8 weeks, and that was because we had a strict deadline of that one event, the Christopher Street Day 2016 in Aschaffenburg, that it had to be done for. And we added a few things afterwards, like the social media upload. Twitter we actually implemented during last Easter hack. So it's still worked on and improved. But the whole thing, like writing the first line of code and building the whole box, only took 8 weeks.
Also, wie viele Mannstunden?
Oh, I don't know. That was like a part-time project. And mainly me. There were a few people helping with the Arduino and things, but it wasn't that many man hours. Code is on Git if you want to look at it. If you have any more questions, we're in the lounge and you can come take a picture of yourself. Would be nice.